Welcome to the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. I'm Yannis Papadakis, business development manager at CREXI and today's host. Each episode, the CREXI team dives into a broad range of topics and conversations with featured experts to investigate trends, educate listeners, and understand the latest industry news in commercial real estate. As the nation's fastest growing online CRE platform, we're excited to provide a window into the inner workings of commercial real estate for this generation and the next. Welcome, and thank you all for joining us for this episode of the CREXI podcast, an insider's look at all things commercial real estate. In this show, we cover a broad range of topics that cater to commercial real estate newcomers and industry leaders alike. I'm your host, Yannis Papadakis, Business Development Manager at CREXI, and today we are thrilled to sit down with Ryan Bodine and Kishan Goel of NewGen Advisory. A little bit about our guests. As SVP at NewGen, Ryan Bodine primarily focuses on representing and identifying hospitality investment opportunities nationwide for his domestic and international partners. Before NewGen, Ryan sourced foreign direct investment for Green Card Fund, an EB-5 invest-to-immigrate regional center, worked as an executive consultant for an education reform organization, and owned an international promotional product company. Ryan attended college at University of Hawaii at Manoa, Roehampton University in London, and finished his degree in international business from Arizona State University, graduating summa cum laude. He is a member of the Asian American Hotel Owners Association, Arizona Lodging Tourism Association, Urban Land Institute, Arizona Association of Economic Development, the Greater Phoenix Economic Council, the Phoenix Committee on Foreign Relations, and the Global Shapers Phoenix Hub Community. Kishan is a W.P. Carey School of Business graduate at Arizona State University. He brings a wealth of business management knowledge from being around a hardworking family that owned various businesses while growing up. Kishan has spent much time in hotel brokerage, curating new relationships and building existing client friendships. He has extensive experience in market research, which sets him apart when he secures a buyer for his listings and helps his clients find the next business opportunity. When the world endured the pandemic in 2020, travel demand fell and the need for affordable housing increased. With government relief funds distributed through multiple channels, Kishan and his partner saw an opportunity to help clients sell their hotels as a conversion to an alternative use. He has successfully assisted nonprofit organizations and investors to convert hotels to market-rate apartments, affordable and transitional housing, as well as behavioral health. In his spare time, he enjoys spending time with his family, going to car shows, and being outdoors in Arizona's beautiful 300-plus days of sunshine. Both of you, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Yannis. Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're excited.
So I have to ask, Ryan, how do you leave an island paradise like Hawaii and go, like, what's the transition like from there to the deserts of the Southwest?
Yeah, well, born and raised in Arizona. So, you know, I knew I had to get out. And I think probably the hardest transition was just moving from Hawaii to London during the winter. And so that was probably the hardest transition, but it was a good experience through and through.
Nice. And, you know, we've gone a little bit into both of your biographies, but I'd love to get a little bit more about your background and hear about your career paths and how you got to where you are today. Why don't we start with you, Ryan? Can you tell us a little bit more about where you're from and how you got your start in commercial real estate?
Yeah. Born and raised in Arizona. And I would say that I've always been entrepreneurial. You know, that was a heck of an intro that you gave me, Yannis. But, you know, to summarize it, I was kind of always running into different experiences. And so, you know, I started young, starting a small business. And then I knew I didn't really want to work a 9-to-5. So I started working with a friend of mine who I grew up with doing this EB-5 program. Right. So I did that for about 5 years. And the same company who owns NewGen, who I work with now, are the same owners of this regional center. So, you know, it was kind of a combination of, you know, being there at the right time, right? Networking and just kind of taking an opportunity, seeing the opportunity and just going with it. And I think that's always been kind of the backbone of all the decisions that I've made, has been to just really look for opportunities and, you know, not be afraid to really take the leap.
Excellent. And Kishan, yourself. How did you find your way into commercial real estate and into hospitality particularly?
Yeah, so actually my first job in high school was actually DJing. So I used to do like a lot of weddings and events. So it was very attention to detail, right? I mean, trying to network, booking gigs. So I opened up my first LLC like in my teens. Once I went on to college, I actually was kind of buying and selling laptops. I'd buy them, fix them, and then resell them. So just like the whole transaction of that, right? Just going out, buying it on Craigslist, fixing it, and then finding like a buyer, right? So essentially it's the thrill of the all three pieces, you know? So after college, I was actually at a function, party actually. And Dan is actually a close friend of our family, which is our broker. So he was like, hey, you know, you can sell a laptop, you can sell a car. He goes, why don't you try selling hotels? And that's just kind of how it started. So it was right after college, actually, when I, you know, first started getting into this.
So, hey, Keisha, when you made the decision, did you even think twice? Or were you like, yeah, hey, I could sell hotels. Let me get into that.
Well, so what happened was I took about a year off after college, right? So I went to school, you know, for business. And I'm like, well, where is that really going to take me, right? So I took a year off and then I found out you have to get a real estate license to sell hotels. So I'm like, all right, I'm back in, you know, school again, essentially. So that's when I got my real estate license and then, you know, just went straight for it. And that's been since then now.
Yeah. I remember, Giannis, we had a temp accountant. His name's Kishore Basu, and he ultimately changed my life. So I was working with the same guy, or I was working with the same company, and, you know, Kishore just said, hey, Ryan, I don't know why, you know, you're doing what you're doing now. You're pushing paper. You know, where the real opportunity is to work for this guy. And it was Dan. And Dan was a one-man show back then. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, I just had my first son. He was 1 year old. And I'm like, you know, I need to do something. So I told Dan and I told the other principals and I told my wife, I'm like, hey, I'm going to get into brokerage. I may not bring a paycheck back for a couple years, but it's what we're going to do. And all of them, they're in support, you know, and, you know, it worked out.
Well, you bring us to, you know, my next question, which is, you know, who were some of the mentors that you had along the way and how did they help shape your career path?
Yeah. Okay. Go for it. I'll let you kick it off.
So I think before brokerage was, I say my parents, you know, my dad helped me out too, as far as, he was kind of buying and selling like cars on the side just for fun. So I did a couple of cars as well where I'd buy them and then, you know, restore and then sell them. So he kind of also pushed me into like this, buying and selling, or at least getting into the brokerage, right? So that'd be, I guess, you know, before brokerage. During brokerage, I'd say, you know, like our culture at NewGen Advisory is pretty like family oriented. So we tend to work together and work pretty well together. So I say Dan, Ryan, and Jigger are probably the mentors as far as at the office. At least, you know, cause we work together on deals and, you know, we've done that for the last 4 or 5 years now. Not to mention the hotel community is like very close knit too, right? So, I mean, we share a lot of the same clients. So making sure that we have that, you know, as far as powwow before saying, hey, I was already working with that client, it just makes it a lot easier moving forward, you know? So, and then since the pandemic, Ryan and I have worked on, you know, most of these conversions together. So that kind of shaped where we are today as well.
Yeah. We've definitely grown together. That's for sure. You know, I'd say my mentor is Mr. Roskin. He was my college professor in international trade. You know, he was one of the first business guys, one of the first guys to do business with China back in the 70s. So this guy has these stories. And, you know, in college, he always, you know, I remember him telling me a story where, you know, he'd say, Ryan, look, I'm flipping through paper and I'm not just reading the news. I'm looking at it as business opportunities. Right. And, you know, he kind of framed my mind and always just being open to opportunities. And, you know, we'd keep in touch after college. You know, I'd tell him what I was doing with EB5, tell him what I would be doing with brokerage. And he would always get me in touch with guys who happen to be in the industry. So Mr. Roskin's definitely been my mentor for the past 10 years or so.
So what were some early lessons that you learned through the career? Anything that became invaluable going forward? Did you have any, call them favorite mistakes that, you know, course corrected you, or maybe there were mistakes at the time, but you didn't realize there were opportunities later?
Yeah. So I've got a working document. I have been doing brokerage for 10 years and it's the life lessons of a hotel broker, right? And so like every deal, you're always learning something new. And, you know, I'd say since the conversions of, you know, for the past 4 years, right, we've been doing a lot of conversions, hotels to apartments, hotels to nonprofits, homeless shelters. And when you change these uses, probably the first thing that I ran into was looking into the CCNRs, right? You may have a hotel that's zoned for homeless housing, but the covenants, codes, and restrictions, there are underlying restrictions that will require the city or the surrounding or the community or the surrounding businesses to approve these amendments to the CCNRs. So that was one thing that I've learned amongst many, but I'd say looking into the CCNRs has probably been the biggest one that we've learned for these past 4 or 5 years.
Kishan, any favorite mistakes or, you know, moments that course corrected you that you learned early in your career that became invaluable going forward?
Yeah. So actually early on, so I started pre-pandemic, about a year or two pre-pandemic. So I used to always do like this ABC process, right? When I'm doing my cold calls, almost like every, I almost had a script, right? When you first start brokerage, you're like, hey, I want to make sure I say everything correctly. Quickly realized that every client's different, right? I mean, some clients want to chit chat and others are strictly business, right? So just trying to craft, you know, the conversation and making sure that it's useful for the end, you know, buyer or seller. So once the pandemic hit, everyone was kind of like, you know, it's a free for all, right? I mean, some clients were doing great in their hotels, others were struggling. So just trying to figure out, you know, how to be a meaningful, like have meaningful conversation with our clients. So I think that's what's really helped now, as far as now that we're kind of over the pandemic, you know, how we can move forward with everything.
Right. Are there some fundamental tenets of your work ethic that you maintain today? You know, I love the idea of keeping a living document with, you know, lessons that are learned along the way. Anything about, you know, how you work or, you know, daily habits, practices that have become essential to your career?
I think just staying consistent and following up, you know, I mean, that's our business, right? I mean, we have to follow up every couple of days. So just making sure you don't forget that, right? And like, I have a list as well, like to-do list essentially every day. Because someone that I talked to a couple of days ago, I'm going to forget today or tomorrow, right? And that could have been a key piece as far as someone making an offer or someone to list their hotel. So it's just really consistency in our business, I'd say.
Well, okay, I think you touched on it also. I think what's, you know, been a really unique attribute for both of us since COVID is just the ability to pivot, right? And looking for opportunities. And, you know, we didn't get into brokerage. Like, first and foremost, we sell hotels. Bottom line, it's all we do. It's very straightforward. But when things are tough, you know, we've naturally pivoted, right? It's not where we would just sit back and wonder where our next steps are. I think just instinctively, we just kind of gravitate towards where we see the opportunity. And, you know, first 2 years, 2020 through 2022, we were gravitating towards hotel and multifamily. And we own that. And then we started noticing cities were more involved. So then we started proactively reaching out to the cities and digging deeper into where the funds are coming from. And so, you know, that's kind of been something that's definitely kept us on the forefront with this conversion initiative.
And that actually, it's a good segue into, you know, our main topic for today's episode, which is, you know, discussing the emergence of hospitality to multifamily conversions. Would you necessarily call it adaptive reuse, or is it more of a conversion? How would you define it?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both, right? Adaptive reuse is probably the best word, right? Because, you know, I know the segment's hotel to multifamily, but it should be really hotel to adaptive reuse, because there are so many alternative uses that people have been looking into converting these hotels into. Multifamily, affordable housing, non-homeless shelters, right? You know, some people were looking to turn a hotel into a pet motel. That's a one-off, right? But, you know, I think just because of the bones of the hotel, there have been so many other avenues that, you know, guys are looking when times are tough and they're looking to expand. Well, it's going to be a lot cheaper to buy an existing product and converting it or reusing it rather than just, you know, building vertical. So, yeah.
So I actually had the opportunity to connect with your colleagues, King and Jigar, on a previous episode of the podcast, all about the basics of the hospitality sector. But could you give us an overview on the current state of the market?
Yeah, I mean, the market's been great. Like I said, with adaptive reuse, we still have clients that we're selling, you know, for marquee departments. But most recently, nonprofits for homeless housing, behavior health, and some of our clients are actually like nonprofits and cities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, look, we're in a unique point in the economy, right, Giannis, where there's a lot of uncertainty. Rates continue to get more expensive. And in general, on a very macro level, the seller's prices and where the buyers need to be at, there is a significant disconnect. So obviously, transactions have slowed down. But as Keishan mentioned, where we are seeing all the activity are these adaptive reuse projects, right? Because, you know, bottom line, there is a housing shortage nationwide. There, you know, in Phoenix, for example, the FBI shut down a drug rehab program that basically put hundreds and thousands of people on the streets. And so now the city of Phoenix or the state, now they're trying to scramble and figure out solutions to put these people in, you know, livable spaces, right? Right. And so, you know, there is activity for sure. And so that's kind of why we're seeing a lot more activity from the nonprofit and the public side. Mm-hmm. Multifamily side, there's still a lot of shortage for housing, but it is tougher to make the deals work because at the end of the day, you know, you're asking sellers to sell their cash flow. And, you know, these conversion buyers need to be in at a certain price after they take into account the cost of capital. And it's just harder to pencil these multifamily deals.
Right. Where would you say investors are most focused, or at least where is their interest now? I mean, either nationally or specifically in your direct market, you know, where are you seeing the bulk of interest coming from?
Typically larger MSAs, Phoenix, Dallas. I know Charlotte, North Carolina is a huge market right now for multifamily. So typically they look for, you know, cities that have high population growth, you know, typically 3 to 4% or more, either like a 5-mile radius from where the hotel is. So as long as they see that there's some growth, either, you know, a big tech company or maybe, you know, any other company that's going to be coming into the market, they typically like to buy somewhere around there. So.
And you touched on this briefly about, you know, hotels having kind of the bones for adaptive reuse, but what else makes hospitality an interesting choice for conversion into multifamily? And what differentiates it from, you know, other products that, you know, may also, you know, need a little more simulating, like office, for example?
Right. Like you said, it takes a little bit more to convert an office to apartments, right? You know, look, the lowest hanging fruit when the conversion started were extended stay hotels, right? Hotels with kitchenettes. You know, then all you had to focus on was just the zoning. But as these conversion buyers started becoming more sophisticated, they started looking into oversized rooms. You know, so you got location and bones is probably the best way to start, right? Location, you want to be surrounded where, you know, as a resident, you want to have the amenities at this location, right? So you want to make sure that grocery stores are nearby, or that, you know, there's a gym or there's a coffee place. If you have a hotel that's, you know, next to the airport surrounded by hotels, it's going to be hard for anyone to want to live there, right? So that's location. And then the bones is, the kitchenettes, the size of the rooms, right? They need to be, you know, north of 300 square feet. If you have sprinklers, right, would be a huge plus. If not, they're going to factor that into the cost. What am I missing here, Kay?
Well, I mean, the good thing with hotels is, I mean, they come fully furnished, right? When you buy a hotel, like you have all FF&E included versus an office, it's typically just a big box, right? And then you got to start putting in walls, and versus hotels, everything's already there. The plumbing's there. You know, if you wanted to do all inclusive with the furniture, you can do that, you know, charge a higher rent. So it's just an easier play typically. I mean, just location wise, as Ryan mentioned, you know, you don't want to be like an industrial park either. So
Right. Yeah.
So what goes into converting a hospitality asset into adaptive use or a residential one? Can you paint us a picture steps wise, you know, from zoning, permitting, you know, HVAC changes? How does that work?
Yeah. So typically what Brian and I first look into, like when we're picking up a listing, is we call the planning and zoning department first. So we ask them what the zoning currently is and what the uses are for that zoning. We ask them, okay, it's a 100-room hotel. If we were to convert 200-room multifamily apartments, is this possible? And if not, you know, what are the restrictions? These restrictions could be, you know, parking. That's a big one. Hotels are typically one-to-one ratio, meaning one hotel room, one parking space. Mm-hmm. When multifamily usually is 2-to-1. So you need to have two parking spaces per room. So if you have a 100-room hotel and you need, you know, 2-to-1, you have to split that in half. And if you only have 50 rooms, then, you know, really cuts into your cost of, you know, as far as your rents.
Zoning density is another one, right? When you're just looking into this is just the zoning part, right? But say the hotel is zoned by right. So it's already zoned for multifamily. They look into zoning density, how many units or dwelling units per acre. And so, you know, they work backwards. And, you know, if, you know, like Keishan said, if there's 100 units and the zoning density only allows 70 units, then you can either pursue a variance to allow the 30, right? Or you're going to just have to shrink it and it's going to affect your cost. You know, they'll look into, so zoning's the first part, CC&Rs is the second that I mentioned earlier. Make sure that the community, the covenants, codes, and restrictions allow alternative uses. You want to look into, you know, are the rooms sprinkled? If they're not, you're gonna have to factor that in. That's gonna probably be a $500,000 cost. Do you have sufficient power if you're gonna put in kitchenettes? And then location is another one as well.
So how does somebody decide whether or not a hotel asset is worthy of a conversion or if it's better off to leave it as is?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to what their exit's going to be, right? And so at the end of the day, these guys, from a buyer's perspective, and this is just for multifamily, from a buyer's perspective, they're going to want to know where their exit's going to be, right? So, you know, you've got a hotel and say a comparable apartment complex, with the same size rooms nearby, you know, their exit's at 180,000 a key. All right, well, okay, if that's our exit, 180 a key, and we were to buy this for say 50,000 a key before we do all the conversions. So we do 50,000 a key and then we put in $30,000 more into it. Our base is $80,000. We stabilize, we can refinance it, or we can sell it at 130,000 a key, right? So the next buyer who's coming in, there's enough meat on the bone for him to make money to sell it at 180, right? That's how these guys figure it out. They work backwards from the multi side, right? From the seller side, you know, what really took off the last 2 years, or sorry, 2020 through call it 2022, was the sellers were able to sell their hotel at an absolute premium because their hotel is being valued on a price per key basis and not on like the hotel's performance, right? But as the hotel business continues to pick up, then their hotel's value as a hotel is going up higher and higher, right? So it's harder for the sellers to justify selling their hotel to a conversion group if their hotel is worth more as is rather than as a conversion. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's also typically a quicker process when you sell to a hotelier versus the conversion.
Right.
So it's also setting those expectations too with the seller. You know, some like, let's say if a hotel is underperforming, but it has kitchenettes and rooms are 400 square feet, it's an ideal conversion. That seller might get a higher price per key, but they might have to wait 6 months for a rezone. So just managing their expectations that, you know, this is 99% going to get done and just you got to wait 6 months for it to close. So just managing the expectations is huge nowadays too.
I think that was the fun part that we got to do the, you know, last year was people find out that the buyers are going to be apartment guys. They're like, okay, well, our hotel's worth 150 a key. They're like, well, hold on, you gotta work backwards, right? And I think, you know, they need to understand kind of the economics behind the buyer's analysis, and then it's ultimately up to them to decide if it's worth them selling at that price point.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit just kind of on that point? What's the potential upside compared to costs, right? Like if you're planning on going through this conversion process, which do you have set aside? You know, what kind of war chest do you need to have? And what, you know, what might be some unexpected costs? You know, where does the process get stopped up? You know, it sounds like first and foremost, zoning seems to be like the primary concern that you want to make sure you're taking care of that. But, you know, mm-hmm. what else should you be planning for?
You want to make sure that you've got a good team, good construction team, right? A lot of all the successful conversion groups, there's only a handful of them. They have their GC down, right? Some have in-house general contractors and their subs, so they're able to control the costs. You know, we've worked with a handful of other groups who are a little bit smaller scale, and you know, the project got hung up on, you know, their subs not going to work, or you know, the budget just being inflated by a couple million dollars. You know, we were with yesterday. We were working with a nonprofit, and they were buying a hotel here in Phoenix, or they bought the hotel in Phoenix. And it wasn't until they started tearing down walls that they realized that there's a lot more deferred maintenance that they had to account for. I think their budget was, what did they say, like $4 million, Kay? And it's up to like $8 or $9 million now?
Yeah, it doubled.
What did they find in those walls?
Well, piping was one. So they weren't doing enough. So the city bought it, but they didn't really know that, you know, you had to replace basically all of the piping or the plumbing. And then the zoning changed, right, where it triggered them to put up some firewalls, which was busting their budget as well. So all these things that you don't know what you don't know until you're like really deep into it. Mm-hmm. It's a costly lesson for sure.
So wait, the city was the buyer, and they also changed the zoning? They changed the zoning on themselves?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it still goes to the same.
Unfortunately, they're not the same people doing it, because it's like.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I mean, it still kind of goes to the same process. Probably because right. there'd be local backlash, right? Saying, "Hey, you're the city, and you're just signing off on things." So they still have to go through the steps. But I think one issue was with the fire marshal. The extinguishers weren't. I guess they were sticking out too far from the wall, so they had to be recessed into the wall. Like mm-hmm. something that anybody would just overlook, right? Like who's really looking into that? Unless the fire marshal, it's their job, they're going to come in and ding you on that, you know? Secondly was when they did the rezone, they had to put in sprinklers then. So that adds on maybe another $800,000 onto the budget.
Wow.
You know, and it's already an older building. So it's kind of like, how much more can we do?
Yeah, that's always the tough part, right? You have these cities. It's amazing the people who work for the city. Right, they're doing selfless work, and they have to take it on the chin from the community who's in an uproar, who aren't fully educated on what the program is and how many lives are actually improving. Mm-hmm. But you know, they have to go through these really lengthy, tedious steps. And even though they're the city, they can, you know, you think that they can change it, but no, they've got to go through a long public process. And I think that was, you know, we sold another hotel to another city earlier this year. And, we prepared the seller. We said, look, you work with the city. It's not going to happen overnight. They need to get council members' approval. They need to get feedback from the community. There's a whole education process. Right. You know, there's a way of doing things with them, no matter whether or not they're buying it, if they're the end user, or if they're just ending up leasing it out to a nonprofit.
You know, I'm very familiar, with, you know, the, community slowing things down, you know, being in Los Angeles, you know, obviously there's a historic homeless problem here as well. And, you know, the acronym they use are NIMBYs, you know, not in my backyard, which, you know,
yeah,
they're already in your front yard, you know, like, come on, like let's work towards solutions. So, it sounds like, you know, those challenges, are kind of anywhere you go. You know, aside from, you know, government challenges, anything else that you feel like you should touch on in terms of, you know, maybe blind spots that the average investor may not consider going in?
If a viewer is looking to get into the hotel business and trying to figure out where the next opportunity is, I think at the end of the day, if I was a hotel buyer, I would want to buy a hotel that's an extended stay product that has kitchenettes. And that's in a market that has multiple demand generators, right? I want to make sure that best case scenario, if a hotel is next to an airport, next to a major university, and it's in a really popular tourist spot, I mean, those are, that's a wish list, right? But the reason why you want to have multiple demand generators is because if a downturn does happen, leisure is going to take a hit, but at least you know that you still have some consistent business that's keeping your business afloat from the airport business or, you know, the university, right? So that's what I would, that's the feedback I would give or recommendation that I would give to people listening to the show right now. If you're getting into the hotel business, make sure you diversify your revenue streams. And, you know, you have to prepare for what may be around the corner.
What kind of incentives are out there for, you know, these types of projects? It sounds like, you know, there's such a demand for it. You know, is there some bait on the hook there that, you know, governments are kind of putting out to make sure that more of these projects happen?
Yeah. So actually most of the projects for the homeless housing was actually funded from the American Rescue Plan Act, which is ARPA is what they call it. This is from the federal level, actually, which happened during COVID. And I want to say there's maybe $200 or $300 million that was set aside just for housing. So when these cities actually purchase these hotels or get into contract with them, the biggest key is going to be the appraisal, right? Because if they have it under contract at $10 million, appraisal comes in at $7 million, they're not going to get the funding, being that it's from the federal level. You know, there's going to be a lot of local backlash, and then, you know, they're not going to be able to fund the project through the city council anyways. So that's just one of the, probably the largest one, right, Ryan? Would you say is ARPA is the biggest funding source right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, there have been other housing directors who we work with in, you know, throughout the Southwest. And, you know, one good example is I had an institutional group, they were a conversion group, and they were basically underwater, right? They found something that basically busted their budget, and they were trying to find a way to still make this deal work. And so got on a call with the new housing director and the seller. And one of the initiatives or one of the proposals that he made to the owner was, you know, hey, you know, Mr. Owner, you know, my main goal from the housing director is to bring, you know, more affordable housing units in the city, right? And what he's found is the cities are being bogged down with their resources and their money when they try to build something or even going through the conversions. So like, well, what are creative ways of us partnering? And so some of the incentives that he's offering or that he did offer was, you know, hey, if I give you 20% of your development cost, then you can give me 20% of affordable housing units. So I can go back to my constituency and tell them that, hey, I brought 20%, you know, I'm making a dent in this housing shortage. Right. And he's able to do it in a very effective and efficient way without getting bogged down in, you know, trying to build something from scratch. So that was an interesting one. And then another initiative that, you know, Keisha and I are working on, you know, earlier in the podcast, I mentioned there's a big disconnect on prices, right? Where sellers need to be to sell their cash flow, they need to sell it at absolute premium. Buyers need to be here because of just the cost of capital. And so in between this, the third party is a nonprofit group. Nonprofits who need places for their residents to stay. And so what we're working on in a handful of deals is you have hotel buyers who are coming in willing to pay this premium. And then we come in and we basically secure a long-term lease with these nonprofits to help bridge this gap. So they'll buy this hotel, they'll lease it out to the nonprofits for 2-3 years. It'll bring their basis down. And then once the lease is up, you know, the sellers own the hotel that they wanted, and essentially they brought down their basis down to their original price point. So it's, you know, I think that's probably a great example in how creative like we've had to be, you know, because, you know, being a broker is a unique job where you have to find solutions. And, you know, this is just one of the initiatives that, you know, Keisha and I are working on.
So what are your primary considerations when advising hospitality conversion clients through current economic times? Obviously, we're in kind of unprecedented, well, not unprecedented, you know, the interest rates have certainly been higher, you know, before I was around commercial real estate. But, you know, for those of us that, you know, maybe have only been in the market for the last 10 years or so, these are definitely kind of unique scenarios with the Fed kind of ratcheting up interest rates. And I think we're expecting, you know, some more raises before the end of the year. You know, what are your primary considerations?
So typically, like on the market rate side for these apartment conversions, they mostly syndicate the deal. So they'll get a handful of investors together. I have a client of mine that's trying to raise 50% loan to value for each property, just to have an incentive for the lender to even lend on it, right? So they come up with about 50%, have a nice pro forma on what their conversion is going to be, and they go and execute. So I think just being well capitalized right now is really what's going to, you know, get deals done.
And any words of advice generally for players in the conversion space? Anybody that might be looking to do it, you know, give us some wisdom.
I'd say get a good zoning attorney. At least start off with that, right? I mean, if you have a hotel owner contract, because typically the zoning attorney, they're going to know the local municipality, right? They're going to know what to do as far as applying and going to the city council meetings, what to say. So if you're going to do it, then just do it right the first time.
They'll have relationships with the council members.
100%.
That's key. You need to make sure you hire the right people.
Yeah. And also a good GC too, right? At least get one or two bids. Cause I had a couple of deals fall out of contract, in the middle of 2021 and 2022, cause top of 2022 is when interest rates went up, right? I mean, inflation really hit. So all the properties that are under contract, their budget was like double. So they couldn't close on the deal. So I say nowadays, now that it's sort of starting to soften, as far as costs of lumber and things, get a couple bids, right? Because some of the GCs are still charging that the premium from last year. And that'd be my words of advice for sure.
Excellent.
I would also say if there are hotel owners listening to this, you know, if you're a holder, if you don't want to sell and you're just hunkering down, just focus on your reviews, right? Because, you know, as a consumer, two things I look for: location and reviews. And, you know, if you treat your customer right and make sure that, you know, you are going above and beyond, they're going to have a great experience and they're going to leave positive reviews. And those positive reviews will be, you know, your, you know, quasi sales force to help generate more business. And I think those are things that you have to do as, you know, business starts slowing down and you're going into uncertain times.
All right. I mean, I think that's great for, you know, any business owner right now too. It's, you know, really, if you're focusing on the client, the customer experience, you know, you're getting good reviews. I know that I check reviews before I go most places that I'm planning to. So yeah. Great advice. All right. Finally, our final topic, given your background and experience, I'm sure our listeners would love to hear your answers to a couple of rapid fire questions that we have lined up for you. You guys ready?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. So if you're given $50 million today and you have to invest it immediately, what would your go-to asset type and location be and why?
I mean, I feel like I have to say hotels. So specifically, extended stay hotels.
Extended stay.
Yeah. So the Candlewood Suites, you know, the stay bridges, those are those, you know, nice interior corridor extended stay hotels. Definitely invest in one of those. Location wise, I'm probably biased, but I'd say Phoenix. You know, being born and raised here and just seeing how we've done through the pandemic, you know, I definitely say extended stay.
I'd put my $50 million towards Crexie. You know, I'd give Mike a call and, you know, see if, you know, we could work something out because you guys are doing some awesome stuff.
Well, I appreciate that. Okay. Next question. Now this is going to sound like, it's going to sound like a trick question, but it's not. Favorite tool or software that you use on the job?
Oh, this is a shameless plug, but I'd say Crexie. Honestly, just because, and the reason why is because, I mean, we probably get the most leads out of the website, being that every time somebody sees our views, our listing, you know, we get to see their name, their number, email address, not to mention trying to find the owner of a property, we can just search on there. So I'd say Crexie. I mean, it's a lot easier on there.
I think every broker can attest that Crexie is the go-to, yeah, right, for OTAs. But I know, Giannis, you weren't looking for a shameless plug. but I think anyone
checks
listening
in the mail,
will
guys,
know,
checks in the mail.
They get Crexie, right? They know what makes Crexie,
yeah,
what it is, right? But for me, I'd say, you know, I use Office 365. And so, you know, Kay and I, we, you know, we share a lot of deals and we need to collaborate on a lot of leads. And so we need to make sure that we're not touching the same leads multiple times, right? You know, I've got a task list, and then I've got my own little ecosystem that kind of helps me to keep track of everything and make sure that I can work remotely if I have to.
And what is the most common misconception about your job or industry?
I think most people think hotel brokerage is easy, right? You know, most people see, you know, when we say, oh, just sold on LinkedIn, and, you know, people might reach out and be like, oh, it must be nice. But it's like, no, you got to know this is like a 6 month, 8 month process, right? Especially these conversions, some of them. It's very tedious work, right? And not everyone sees that, you know, we put a lot of time and effort into this, right? And not even that, just pivoting too, right? It seems like we have to pivot, you know, every so often and making sure we're up on the next new trend with these conversions.
Yeah. You know, brokerage in general, I think any other broker I meet, even my most fierce competitors, you know, I always take my hats off to them because it does take a certain type of cut to be willing to go without a paycheck for a long time. And, you know, a deal can fall out the day of, right? And the 10 months or 12 months that you're waiting just, you know, it totally collapses, right? But it takes a type of go-getter. And so, brokerage isn't easy. But it's fun. It's a great opportunity to make a lot of stuff happen, make an impact, and also just have the flexibility.
And as we wrap up, any parting words you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah, I would say invest in multifamily conversions.
Yeah. No, I think, look, the hotel industry in general, whether you're looking to buy a hotel, you're looking to convert it, you're looking to repurpose it, you know, we found a lot of multifamily investors moving into the hotel space because, you know, their background was in multifamily and also retail. And so if, you know, a good deal is at a 5 cap, well, you know, heck, you know, a 7 cap or an 8 cap for a hotel, you know, that's a lot more than what they're earning. A huge upside with hotels. And if you buy right, and you surround yourself with multiple demand generators and you really invest in location, you invest in your people, it'll pay off because then there's going to be a lot of different pivots that you can make if you need to, if the economy takes a downturn.
Well, gentlemen, thank you both for joining and sharing with us. I know you're both very busy and we appreciate you spending time with us to sit down and talk.
Giannis, we appreciate it. Thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much.
And where can people find you online if they want to get in touch? Email, social media?
Yeah, email is my first name, Kishan, Kishan, dot my last name, Gohel, at newgenadv.com. I'm on LinkedIn and Facebook as well. You can just look up my name, Kishan Gohel.
What he said with my name inserted, you can Google New Gen Advisory to learn more about us. And you can find us.
Kishan, Ryan, thank you both. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure not to miss the next one. Visit go.crexi.com/podcast. That's go.crexi.com/podcast and sign up to get the very next episode delivered straight to your inbox. You can also subscribe to the Crexi podcast on your favorite podcast app or check out our YouTube channel at www.youtube.com/Crexi for video recordings of each episode. Goodbye, stay well, we'll see you next time.